Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Is a day for victory laps and acknowledging that you can delay the inevitable, but no matter what you do, run from it, dread it, destiny arise all the same for some of the same powers in football. It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty here with you guys. And
something about that statement that you just made, Gojo, makes me feel like you're about to take up that narcotic again. It makes me feel like you're about to jump on that bandwagon for that team that's out in Kansas City.
Chris, I will not confirm or deny that yet. We've got some time before we're going to talk about the Kansas City Chiefs here. But let's just say, initially, I'm still feeling good about my decision to quit the stuff.
Okay.
We can get to that in a little bit. We can get to plenty about that. We've got to talk about the Baltimore Ravens here as well. We've got plenty of college football news with Mario Cristobal now signing up to be the next head coach for the Miami Hurricanes, according to a number of reports here. But before we get to any of that, Chris, you and I spent a lot of time at the end of this last week trying to make claims of what we thought we knew, trying to help one of our friends kick a different kind of narcotic. A particular game in college football, the Alabama Crimson Tide and the Georgia Bulldogs took the field this weekend, and we tried to tell our producer, Devin Kane, don't do it. Reconsider, read some literature on the subject. And yet Devin still went out here and backed the Tide +6.5 heading into the SEC championship game. Devin, I wanted to give you the room right off the top to gloat because you understood that Nick Saban always wins and we tried to deny the inevitable.
Listen, guys, I tried to tell you, going against Nick Saban wouldn't be me, couldn't be me. Now, listen, I didn't say this on Friday, but looking back at, and I think a lot of people are talking about this now, Georgia dominated throughout their entire schedule. But if you look at the teams in the SEC they played, Arkansas, Kentucky, even Clemson early in the year, these teams aren't ranked. So, like, you have to ask, is Alabama the first legit top five team they played all season long?
I still think Kentucky, Arkansas, those were good teams.
Those were good teams, yeah.
Clemson's defense, still very legit. Like, all those things still hold here. But this is also just, Chris, the Nick Saban voodoo magic. Like, for me of all people, someone who has tasted defeat at the hands of Nick Saban and the evil empire, you think I'd know better.
Yeah, I think you would know better. But here's the thing, Gojo, and we didn't account for this. Like, the skill position players for the Crimson Tide, I mean, John Metchie, can't say enough about what he did before he left the game with that ACL injury, and then Jamison Williams. That's a pretty damn good 1-2 punch. And then I don't think any of us expected Bryce Young to go out there and set an SEC championship game record for total yards that he accounted for to the tune of 461 against that Georgia defense. Nobody saw that coming, but the big story in that game was what the Crimson Tide's offensive line did to the Georgia defensive front. That's the part that's the biggest shocker. But like Kirby Smart said, maybe this is one of those wake-up calls that his team needs before they go into bowl season and getting ready for the playoff, because they were feeling themselves a little bit too much going into this game. They thought it was going to be one-sided, rolling their helmet out there and trying to get a win, knowing that they actually didn't need to win this game in order to be in the playoff. And so the more desperate team had more urgency, and they went out there and won and took care of their business. I know we got plenty of time to talk about it, but on its face, that's what I think happened Saturday in the SEC championship game.
Yep, I think there was a lot of that present in that game. And we can debate motivation. We can get the number one quote that came out of the college football weekend because of that in just a little bit as well. We got plenty more on the playoff and that coming up. We want to hear from you also. Be a part of Canty and Golic Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. Hit us up at 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. ESPN Nation's presented by Dr. Pepper. Bowl season's heating up. The fans are hyped. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. And speaking of thinking teams were going to just roll over, Chris, yesterday we had the Baltimore Ravens and the Pittsburgh Steelers playing a game fresh off of all those reports from Adam Schefter and others that Ben Roethlisberger, the quarterback for the Steelers, had been privately telling old teammates and other people that this was indeed going to be his last year with the Pittsburgh Steelers. They go out and manage to get a win despite some last-second attempted heroics by Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. And Chris, that was the formerly number one in the AFC ranked Baltimore Ravens heading into that game. So what'd you see that went wrong there here? Because we know this Ravens team's been banged up for a while.
Well, here's the thing. Lamar Jackson played awful. Like, I know everybody is saying that the supporting cast is not up to snuff and that the Ravens are asking Lamar to do too much. But, I mean, sometimes Lamar Jackson has to take what's there for him. He has to be able to live to fight another down. And there were just too many negative plays that he allowed to happen throughout the course of that game that your typical quarterback doesn't happen. Like, Lamar Jackson was blitzed 19 times on dropbacks. And of that, he was sacked 4 times. Like, there's a book right now out on the Baltimore Ravens offense, and it started in week 10 against the Miami Dolphins when we saw Brian Flores come with all those zero pressures and didn't allow the Ravens offense to breathe when it came to the run game and then forced Lamar to get the ball out hot and those receivers to have to win in one-on-one battles. Teams don't fear the Ravens' weapons at the perimeter. The wide receiver core, they don't think that those guys can routinely win one-on-one battles and beat them for the big play. And so what they're doing is they're committing a lot more guys to the rush. And we saw that yesterday with the Pittsburgh Steelers. They were continuously blitzing off of the slot. And you're talking about a team that doesn't necessarily do a whole lot of blitzing. I want to say on the season, the highest blitz rate that they had in any one game was 25%. And yesterday that team was over 40. So that's a situation where they realize bringing pressure forces Lamar to get rid of the ball before he wants to, and recognizing that those receivers can't uncover quickly within the down. And so I think that's what led to a lot of the miscues that we saw from Lamar. I mean, hell, Gojo, you just look at the first drive. That third down in the red zone, Lamar Jackson can't throw that ball up for grabs, and that ends up being a turnover in the end zone where you could have had 3 points. That can't happen. And 2 plays before that, Lamar Jackson ends up taking a sack. You can't do those types of things in the red zone. And so those are the things that you have to be concerned with, because Greg Roman hasn't come up for answers to the different pressure looks that opposing defenses are facing or are presenting them. And if you don't come up with answers for them, you know this is a copycat league, spending time with the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know what teams are going to do. If you struggle with something in 1 week, teams are going to try you with that the following week to see if you got it fixed. And so far, the Ravens have had 4 cracks at it and still have not shown the ability to be able to have answers when teams bring pressure. They can't run the football because opposing defenses are gapped out with all of those guys at the line of scrimmage, and they can't throw the ball because their receivers can't uncover quickly in the down and win one-on-one. So that's the problem that I see with the Baltimore Ravens, and they're going to have to get that fixed. Now, that being said, they had a chance to win the game at the end of the game on that 2-point conversion, an aggressive call by John Harbaugh, which I actually loved, and they weren't able to get it done. But I think that the story for yesterday's game has to be Ben Roethlisberger and what that Steelers offense did in the fourth quarter, coming up with 17 points when they really didn't do anything for the first 3 quarters of that game.
You mentioned John Harbaugh's decision to go for 2. This was the Baltimore Ravens head coach in the press conference when asked about the reason to go for it in that spot.
Try to win the game right there. We were pretty much out of corners, you know, at that point in time. So there's an opportunity to try to win the game right there.
And Chris, what he meant by that was just reported earlier today, breaking news that Marlon Humphrey, one of the best corners in football and certainly one of the last remaining in a room that's already been ravaged by injury, going to be out for the rest of the year with a torn pec. So, Chris, that's really the story of the season for Baltimore, right? Because everything you mentioned about Lamar Jackson and some of the bad habits that he's developed, which really kind of emblematic of what a lot of these young stud quarterbacks are dealing with right now, right? When the big play gets taken away, how are you responding to what defenses are throwing at you? And the results have been a mixed bag. Lamar Jackson had to put on the cape and be Superman in the first half of the season. There was too much attrition. They still hadn't gotten their first round pick at wide receiver back in Rashad Bateman, and that receiver room had not taken the next step. The passing attack had not taken the next step that we talked about this last offseason, and you got bad habits that formed through the first half of that season.
No doubt about it. And Rashad Bateman hasn't stepped up the way that the Ravens thought he would when they made him a first-round draft pick. I know he started off the season with an injury, but they figured that in the second half he would be a much bigger factor in the passing game, and that just hasn't come around. It's too much reliance on Mark Andrews and Hollywood Brown, and you need that third option, and right now it's just a hodgepodge of guys. And I thought that Greg Roman did try to be a little bit creative with some of the orbit motions with the running backs out of the backfield to stretch the Pittsburgh Steelers defense horizontally and then hit some shots in between the numbers in the middle of the field. But those opportunities for easy throws were too far and few in between for Lamar. And I think that's why everybody's critical of the play calling and the sequencing of plays from the coaches from the Baltimore Ravens just because you don't have enough built-in plays to take that pressure off of your quarterback, knowing that opposing defenses are throwing the kitchen sink at him. Since week 10, Gojo, since week 10, Lamar Jackson is facing blitz on 46% of his dropbacks. 46%. That's half the damn time people are blitzing him when he drops back to pass, and he's getting sacked on 10% of those dropbacks. So that is a problem that they've got to get fixed. Otherwise, you might be talking about Lamar Jackson not being able to make it through this season, let alone the Ravens trying to get to the playoffs.
Yeah, he's been sacked a league-leading 37 times on the year so
far.
That
ain't good.
No, and you're right. That is not a survival metric, but it's indicative of what we've seen, right? Lamar Jackson, blocking for, and listen, as a former offensive lineman, blocking for a quarterback that can move around and make the plays like Lamar Jackson is a unique challenge. It's a gift because more often than not, he's going to get you out of trouble. He's going to make plays, but it's also going to go south sometimes. And as you watch his trust deteriorate in everyone on that team that is not him right now, you get a lot what you saw during the game last night for Lamar Jackson and company. It's why you and I both came on and said they might have been ranked number one, but they're not better than that Patriots team that we all trust right now, looking down from the top of the AFC as they head into tonight's game. So we'll have plenty more time to play doctor on the Baltimore Ravens, because this is still a team that's going to be very much in the playoff picture, and in a chaotic AFC, isn't done yet. But coming up in about 30 seconds, let's get to the other side of this. Have we watched Ben Roethlisberger's last stand during the last stretch of this Pittsburgh Steelers season? We'll get to that after this word from Wendy's. A better breakfast starts with a better biscuit. That's why Wendy's is serving a hot and buttery Wendy's breakfast biscuit with bacon or sausage, egg and cheese for just $1. That's oven-baked bacon or savory breakfast sausage with fresh cracked egg and cheese on a buttery, flaky biscuit for just $1. So don't risk your biscuit someplace else. Get to your nearest Wendy's drive-thru during breakfast hours and get your Wendy's breakfast biscuit with sausage or bacon, egg and cheese for just $1. Limited time only at participating U.S. Wendy's.
Big Ben should retire. Like, go back in and say, man, I quit.
I will say that this news did not surprise me, that Big Ben is mulling his retirement, thinking about, you know, the end of his career. The guy's 39 years old, not doing the graceful aging that Tom Brady's doing.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And Chris, we saw that as the backdrop heading into Sunday's game against the Baltimore Ravens. All the reports from Adam Schefter and others that Ben Roethlisberger have been telling people that this was going to be his final season with the Steelers. You think those people had to be like, well, yeah, dude, we already knew that. Hadn't you been watching the tape?
That was a Captain Obvious moment, wasn't it? Because even though Ben hadn't said anything about it, or you haven't heard anything from his circle, you just knew based on the performance and the team not producing to the level that the organization has become accustomed to, that they were probably going to pivot at the quarterback position after this season. Like, if Ben Roethlisberger did not show up, this is not a last dance situation where you feel like they're capable of competing for a championship. And that's the standard in Pittsburgh. So, yeah, I already knew it. We didn't necessarily need Ben or his people to leak that to the media, because his play made it painfully obvious that Pittsburgh had to do something after this year at quarterback.
Yeah, and now to be clear, we can say all that, and yesterday still have been a performance that was pretty solid from Ben Roethlisberger. There was nothing gaudy about it. But, Chris, we know how that's not how that offense has been structured for the better part of the last 2 years, right? It is get the ball out of Ben Roethlisberger's hands relatively quickly as that offensive line is gelled. This has been certainly different formationally this year with Matt Canada as the offensive coordinator. But this news was not surprising. And if you listen to Ben Roethlisberger talking about this after the game, the Pittsburgh Steelers star quarterback, it's not like he did a ton to downplay all this. Mike Tomlin did, however, the Steelers head coach, mentioned that these rumors were not a distraction for the team.
There's nothing to manage. Ben doesn't allow it to become an issue. Ben has been pretty solid in terms of his expressions that he's singly focused on what it is that we're doing now. He'll deal with those things on the other side of this journey, and I'm with him on it. And so it is not a distraction. I thought it was funny that it was seemingly a story this weekend, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, Mike Tomlin probably for the same reasons that we did, because when you heard Ben after the game, we have talked on this show extensively, Marcus, about how you come out and deny something that you don't want out there, like Mike Tomlin.
Never say never, but never.
And Ben Roethlisberger basically said, I'm not going to talk about it right now. I'm focused on these games, meaning he knows good and damn well. So this Steelers team's doing exactly what we thought they would do, Marcus. They are fighting till the bitter end to keep their nose above water in that 500 record, something that Mike Tomlin rarely ever gets, well, does not ever get below.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, this is one of those situations where this Steelers team realizes their season was on the line in yesterday's game, which is a rivalry game. And, Mike, you spent time with Pittsburgh. I was with the Baltimore Ravens. For people that haven't had an opportunity to be a part of this rivalry up close and personal, like, this is the most intense rivalry in all of professional football. So when these two teams tangle, it usually has huge playoff implications. And for one side of this matchup in the Steelers, like, this was their season. And Tony Romo, who was doing the game, said as much at the outset of it. He said, the Steelers' season comes down to whether or not they can win this game. Their playoff chances are on life support. They were in the cellar of this division going into Week 13. So they had to get a win. There was a level of urgency that they needed to approach this with. And you didn't really see that show up on the offensive side until the fourth quarter. But all it took was that big play to Chase Claypool for 40 yards to start the quarter. I think it was a 3rd-and-1. And then right after that, the Diontae Johnson touchdown with the miscommunication with Anthony Averett in the secondary of the Ravens. And then that kind of started the Steelers on this run where they were able to score 17 points. And ultimately, that 2-point conversion to Pat Freiermuth put the game in control for the Steelers. And then, you know, the Ravens, they did give that effort at the end of it, but they just came up just short. But I expected to see the best that this Steelers offense had to offer. And I think we got a glimpse of that in the fourth quarter. Now, do I think that's something that Ben can replicate? No, I don't. I don't. I just don't see it because we know how shorthanded the Ravens were in their secondary, and those guys just couldn't hold up. And they suffered another big loss in Marlon Humphrey yesterday. So this is a situation where Ben took advantage of a shorthanded Ravens defense at the end of the ball game, and he was able to make some critical throws. And his guys, the skill position players that he needed to show up, played big. Diontae Johnson had a 100-yard receiving game with 2 touchdowns. Najee Harris had over 100 yards from scrimmage. Chase Claypool had some big catches. So, like, that's the elements that he needed on the offensive side of the ball to show up in order to have a chance to win showed up big in the fourth quarter, and that's why they were able to get the dub.
Yeah, Chris, I think it's a great point. This isn't going to be something that's easy to replicate week to week, right? Ben Roethlisberger's current physical state will not allow for that. He is not physically able to be the quarterback consistently that he once was. It'll leak out in spurts like this, but the one thing that I know is the surefire force inside that building. You mentioned being over there. When I went to training camp with the Steelers, it was coming off an 8-8 season. And they put knee braces on everybody. They were in full pads. I'm pretty sure it felt like more than the CBA should allow at that point. And it was all because Mike T was ticked off that they had been below the standard. You walk into that building, and the first thing you see over on Carson Street in the South Side is a big old sign that says the standard is the standard. And when you are below that around there, and you got young wide receivers talking about we should play music at practice and all these things, you can best believe you are going to get the best, most agitated version of Mike Tomlin. And boy, oh boy, is that a tremendous motivator if you were a team looking for some direction right there.
Oh, no question about it. And Mike T, I mean, he's as fiery as they come, and when you look at the two coaches in this matchup, like, they are ultra-competitive. I mean, this is the 30th time that they've matched up, and I think Mike Tomlin has 16 wins to John Harbaugh's 14 wins, and both of them have Super Bowl wins on their resume. So this is always going to be a closely contested matchup, and for the Steelers, their season was on the line. But, I mean, if you want to know about what this rivalry is about, all you got to do is go back to yesterday's game and see that hit that Chuck Clark put on Diontae Johnson in the second quarter with about 7.5 minutes to go. Like, that hit symbolizes the physicality that this game is always going to be played with, and it's going to be a gritty performance, and it's going to come down to the end of the game. And fortunately for the Steelers, they were able to find themselves on the winning side of the plays that determined the outcome. Like, that defensive holding on Anthony Averett that overturned that interception by Patrick Queen, that was a huge play in the game, and then the Steelers were able to go down and punch that in for a touchdown and a 2-point conversion, and then all the pressure, of course, was going to be on Baltimore to be able to put together a drive, and the Ravens did, but they just couldn't convert on the 2-point conversion like the Steelers did. So, I mean, listen, that game was what we expected. Like, it lived up to the expectations of a Ravens-Steelers rivalry game. It's just not the outcome that we all expected because Baltimore seemed like they were the better team throughout the course of this season in comparison to what the Steelers had done. But the Steelers had that desperation, they had that urgency, and their season is alive for another week. So we'll see what happens with this group down the stretch. But knowing the head coach and Mike Tomlin, this ain't going to be a team that folds.
No, Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. We know that much coming off of this. The Steelers made the plays to win in this one. They deserve all the credit, but the diagnosis coming off of this is going to be a lot more about the failings of Lamar Jackson as a result of bad habits formed on a desperate, banged-up team at this point. We can get into plenty more of that, but coming up next, what happens when a duck flies south for the winter and never comes home? One school in college football is about to find out. That's next here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We will get to a first in the NFL on this 2021 season and an incredible moment that was born out of that for the Detroit Lions. But Chris, we've had big news breaking today in the world of college football as the coaching carousel continues to spin. It was announced that Mario Cristobal is leaving the Oregon Ducks for the now vacant Miami head coaching job. For anyone that missed it, Manny Diaz had been flapping in the wind the then current Miami head coach who had been kept on staff and was still being recruited despite plenty of rumors and reports about the status of the Ducks head coaching job, of the Canes head coaching job. But Miami gets their man, Chris. So how excited should Hurricanes fans be about Mario Cristobal, who is an alum, who is, you know, a Cuban American now heading back home to Miami?
Well, yeah, and he's also a national championship with Miami two times over, right? I mean, as a player, as an offensive lineman with that program, and then he was an assistant coach in the mid-2000s. So this is somebody that's familiar with the culture that Miami wants to get back to. So from the standpoint of building the infrastructure that it takes to be able to have sustained success, that guy knows a thing or two about what it's going to take and the blueprint or the path forward in order to be able to get that done. And then coming from Oregon, where he was 35-13 as the head coach, like, there's a lot to feel good about in terms of who's going to be responsible for building your program around. But one of the things that you have routinely brought up is just Miami's commitment to winning, not just with hiring the coach and the coaching staff, but also the infrastructure around him, the facilities, the money that's going into the program in order to make sure that you're putting a winning product on the field. And it feels like that's where Miami is pivoting in terms of the administration being willing to make that commitment and go out to get the very best coaching candidate and to go out and get the very best athletic director to get this program resurrected. So I think this is a great start, but by no means is Miami done in terms of being able to address their football program and trying to get it to be one of the best in the conference and then considered one of the best in the landscape of college football.
Yeah, and Chris, how they got there is important in all that too, right? Because this was peak college football. I thought the way they went about this was disrespectful to Manny Diaz, certainly. But again, none of that matters in college football. This is a bottom line business. And all this family that everyone preaches and all the niceties get thrown out are secondary to wins, losses, and leverage. That is all you've got in this sport. And so I certainly felt for Manny Diaz. I know a lot of people won't based on what went down when he took the Temple job only to leave to come down to Miami. But to see him twisting out in the wind there, it was an ugly stretch of days for Miami that was only going to work out if they did just this. And the combination of him coming over along with Dan Radakovich as the athletic director, who would be leaving Clemson in that role, that has a chance to bail them out. This is the ultimate answer of, Chris, hey, if you put the right answer down on the test and then just completely neglect to show your work. Like, don't tell people how you got here, but just throw out the result that you wanted here because they are going to win. Because the only powerful forces in college football are money, having a fertile recruiting backyard in your background, and then the luck of having a very good, qualified alumni go on to become a marquee head coaching candidate, because that ends up being one of the most powerful forces in college football each and every coaching cycle.
Yeah, they're checking all the boxes when it comes to that. And then when you look at what Cristobal is going to have to work with, like, he doesn't have to worry about being able to find a quarterback. He's got that in redshirt freshman Tyler Van Dyke, and then he's got Jalen Knighton as well to pair in the backfield. So he'll have some key pieces in order to hit the ground running in year one. So I'm expecting that this thing is not going to take long to get it turned around and put them in position where they can consistently compete for ACC titles. Like, That's a minimum right now for where I expect this Miami program to be over the course of the next 2 to 3 seasons. So I think it's a home run hire. I like that, and I like the pairing with him and the AD from Clemson. And so we'll see what those two are going to be able to come up with. But, I mean, this Miami program is not all that dissimilar from USC when you start talking about the footprint that they actually have to recruit. Now it's just a matter of Mario Cristobal being able to convince them those guys, the prep players in the Florida area or guys that are in the transfer portal that might be happen to be from the South Florida area. It's a matter of him being able to sell them on his vision and why they should come play at the U and how that program is going to get back to what we knew them at the height, which is, you know, a team that's always going to be in the conversation for best in the landscape of college football.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating, Chris, because you mentioned he gets out of Oregon at a time where you had started to amass a lot of talent there, especially defensively, some of the marquee players. That is going to be a lot more difficult to recruit now that USC is going to be back in the mix with what's going on there, getting Lincoln Riley out there. You go down where talent certainly won't be an issue at this spot. I am very interested in who the coordinating hire is going to end up being, especially on offense. Joe Brady is now freed up after being fired by the Carolina Panthers. Because, Chris, the one thing that we do have to remember with Mario is he's super accomplished. Like, their O-line play is going to be fixed in a way that was never really addressed while Manny Diaz was the head coach. Quarterback, I'm going to be interested in. Because Justin Herbert looked pretty ordinary at times compared to the guy that we have seen in the NFL when he was in a Ducks uniform. And Tyler Van Dyke showed a lot of flashes of special this year. And so who they get calling the plays there on offense especially, I think is going to go a long way on how this actually practically works out, because those expectations are going to be sky high, like you said.
No question about it. So that's going to be important. But the one thing that I will say they have going for them is, I think when it comes to the division that they're actually playing in,
yeah,
That's probably the right division that you want to be in when you start looking at the outlook of the programs in the Coastal versus the Atlantic. So I just feels like there's a natural opportunity for Miami to ascend in a way that he probably would not have had. If you're talking about staying at Oregon, knowing how the competition is going to get that much tougher in the Pac-12. So yeah. I think it's a great spot for Mario Cristobal. He's going to resonate with that community because he's a Miami alum, and he reminds them from a nostalgia standpoint of the success of yesteryear, and they're going to be able to bring back some of those elements. I remember when the U was at its height in the 2000s, the early 2000s, it was all about being able to routinely bring back guys that were from that program that have had success at the highest levels in college, that had success in the National Football League. When you can bring those guys back around your program, that does something to the younger guys that are actually there. And then that also attracts a lot of the prep players and a lot of the guys that are going to be in the transfer portal. So I think there's a chance for Mario Cristobal to have a lot of success when it comes to recruiting the U, just because he's going to be able to use his tentacles to draw back some of those guys that have not necessarily been associated with or as close to the program as they have been in years past. So I think that's also a key element with getting somebody that's a former alum as your head coach.
It's going to be huge. And you mentioned, you're right, the landscape they're stepping into where Clemson had its first down year in a long time in the ACC and is now losing Brent Venables, their defensive coordinator, longtime defensive coordinator, to that Oklahoma job. The marquee quarterbacks in your conference, and Sam Howell, Kenny Pickett, Sam Hartman, are all likely going to be departing the league here. You're going to return with one of the better quarterbacks and a talented roster. It better go well quick. Because while we're going to get to put a Band-Aid on the way this whole process looked now because they got their guy, the one thing this entire ball of yarn tells me is if it doesn't go well, I don't expect the decision makers around Miami to respond with patience and respond with a lot of understanding, because that ain't how it's been going. But they did make moves by landing Mario Cristobal.
Breaking move. Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports.
I was going to get one of those reads right. Coming up next, speaking of someone who got it right, we finally get to put a W in the column for one team that had needed it about as bad as any other in the NFL. That's next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Danny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We still get to talk to our ESPN betting analyst, Tyler Foljam, in a little bit. Mina Kimes, our ESPN NFL analyst, who I am hopeful I can convert into a Notre Dame fan for reasons that we will explain later, as well as Bruce Feldman, college football reporter over at The Athletic, to talk about a lot of the moving and shaking going on with the coaching carousel. We are also here brought to you by Fidelity Investments. But Chris, before that, we got to celebrate a little bit here because I feel like all of us, especially here on this show, had come to root for the Detroit Lions a little bit. And Dan Campbell and company, the kneecap biters of the world, finally got over the hump against the Minnesota Vikings this weekend. A last-minute game-winning drive engineered by Jared Goff. It is not really how I saw this win coming about here, but here we are in 2021. Stranger things have happened.
No doubt about it, but everybody found themselves rooting for the Detroit Lions yesterday, especially what the state of Michigan had been through earlier in the week with the tragedy at Oxford High School, and then the Detroit Lions honoring them at the game, pregame, with the moment of silence, and then having the patch on the jersey as well as the decal on the helmet. Like, I thought it was just a classy touch all the way around, and for that to be the first win of the Detroit Lions season, like a community that had been hurting because of that, like it just felt like that was the perfect moment for that team to rise up and be able to win a game, especially at the end of it. Because, Gojo, I got to tell you, after that fourth down questionable call to go for it on your own, what was that, 28-yard line?
Yeah.
Like, they wanted it so bad that it led to them making a decision that ultimately could cost you the game. Because had you punted that ball away, you give your defense a chance to make a stop. Besides, like, the fact that they didn't do that, they turned the ball over and they give the ball to the Vikings point-blank range that ends up being a touchdown. And now you're asking Jared Goff to drive the length of the field with no timeouts. I mean, you just didn't feel like that was going to happen, like that wouldn't be in the cards. But credit to them, they were able to get that job done. And I'm not sure what the Vikings secondary was doing playing off coverage on the last play of the game like that. But Amon-Ra St. Brown just went into the end zone 2 yards and turned around, and he was able to hook up with Jared Goff for the game winner. And I think everybody around the country was ecstatic for the Detroit Lions because this is a team, as you mentioned, that plays hard every single week, and they're in competitive in more games than not. So for them to finally find themselves on the winning side of it, I think everybody can take that huge sigh of relief and say, okay, they're not going to join those infamous teams like the 2017 Cleveland Browns or the 2008 Detroit Lions. Like they don't have to deal with that kind of scar of being a winless team throughout the entire season. So good for Dan Campbell and his staff. I'm happy that they were able to get the win. But on the other side of it, you're probably talking about that loss putting Mike Zimmer on one of the hottest seats in the National Football League.
Yeah, that decision you mentioned, not only to play off on defense on that final snap, but the fact that that came immediately after a timeout. That was not a response. That was a calculated plan that they went into that final play with that should rightly be called into question because no one can explain that decision here. So that was certainly an issue, as you mentioned. I saw it on Twitter. Andrew Hawkins and Joe Thomas, former Cleveland players on that team, and Dan Orlovsky, our colleague here at ESPN, both said that they should pop champagne like the 72 Dolphins, that they get to keep those infamous titles here. But you mentioned what we heard from Dan Campbell in the wake of the tragedy there in that community. This was the Lions head coach minutes after that win walking to the podium to keep perspective.
This game ball goes to the whole Oxford community. All those were affected. And that being said, man, I want us to not forget these names: Madison Baldwin, Hannah St. Juliana, Justin Schilling, Tate Muir, Phoebe Arthur, John Ashutu, Riley France, Elijah Mueller, Kylie Osigi, Aiden Watson, and Molly Darnell, who's a teacher. Those names, for all those, will never be forgotten, and they're in our hearts and our prayers and all the families, and not to mention all those that were affected by all of this, the classmates, the brothers and sisters, the cousins, the teachers, everybody.
Chris, I think that's part of the reason a lot of us found ourselves rooting for Dan Campbell's, because that wasn't forced. That was genuine. You could tell he was going to do that win or lose coming up to the podium because he understands that this is the actual important thing that this community is dealing with right now, and that certainly a win for the Detroit Lions is great for that team, is great for their psyche, but ultimately that was a dose of perspective that comes from someone who I think understands really where his feet are planted. So congratulations to the Detroit Lions, and certainly our thoughts and prayers, as Coach echoed there, are with that community that is hurting. Stick with us here. We'll be back in a minute on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.